You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, please pay very close attention to this broadcast. It will not be completed today. It will be completed tomorrow. It is entitled American Crises. Ladies and gentlemen, the following broadcast was written by Robert Allen. It was inspired in part and taken from material originally broadcast on the Hour of the Time by yours truly, William Cooper. It's entitled, The American Crises. Stand by. Ladies and gentlemen, the corporate United States has declared war upon the citizens of the Union States. This is our manifesto. This is our rallying cry. This is our reply. These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly. It is dearness only that gives everything its value. Heaven knows how to put a proper price upon its goods, and it would be strange indeed if so celestial an article as freedom should not be highly rated. Britain, with an army to enforce her tyranny, has declared that she has a right not only to tax, but to bind us in all cases whatsoever. And if being bound in that manner is not slavery, then is there not such a thing as slavery upon earth? For so unlimited a power can belong only to God. Thomas Paine, in The American Crisis, 1, December 19, 17 and 76. The crises today. These indeed are the times that try men's souls. We, like Paine, are confronted with the increasing power, ruthlessness, and tyranny of unlimited government. Government at all levels has extended its reach far beyond any authority granted to it, and there are but few who are not affected by it daily. Meaningful exercise of individual liberties is all but totally restricted. Not now by a foreign king, but by a government of men who have presumed for themselves the same authority once sought by that old tyrant, the king. Politicians and anonymous power brokers who know no restraint nor loyalty find a ready supply of accomplices among other base men eager to do their bidding. Driven by greed or self-supposed importance, such men are willing and think themselves able to enact any measure whatever into law without regard to constitutional restraint or care for the effect upon people's lives. These small men seek by these measures to bind us in all cases whatsoever, just as the former tyrant and his minions thought to do. And because they attempt to exercise the same prerogatives with the same object and intent, we find that the same grievances listed against that first American tyrant in the Declaration of Independence fit the modern tyranny exactly. He has obstructed the administration of justice. He has made judges dependent on his will alone. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution. For quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for abolishing the free system of English laws, for establishing an arbitrary government, for abolishing our most valuable laws and altering fundamentally the forms of our government, and for declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. And they are doing that. They have intruded their jurisdiction falsely within the territorial boundaries of the several states. When the Constitution limits their power to legislate in all cases whatsoever to the 10-mile square area, the seat of government known to us as Washington, D.C. American government today distinguishes itself as having the same character as such a king, obstructing the simplest justice and sending forth swarms of officers whose sole function seems to be to harass us, eat out our substance, destroy our lives and liberties, and to search out new subjects for their king. By international agreements, public and secret, United Nations treaties, and a host of other arrangements, we are indeed subjected to jurisdictions foreign and repugnant to our Constitution. And these are enforced by large bodies of armed troops, police, and military, and laws, so-called, which allow for us to be further deprived of property, trials by jury, or any trial at all in some cases, and which have already completely altered fundamentally the forms of our government. Innocent, peaceable men are now subject to loss of life, liberty, and property at the hands of the very government once established to protect these essentials of free men, and the officers who commit these crimes are indeed protected from punishment by mock trials in the form of political hearings without fear of criminal prosecution. Openly, taxation is now imposed without limit or consent. But the more pervasive and hidden tax upon our production, which results from a corrupted and debased currency, is far greater. Because our money only comes into existence in the form of a debt, the more productive we are, the further into debt we go. And if we somehow stopped production and collected all currency in circulation, we could never pay such previous debt because the currency to cover the imagined interest has never, ever been printed. The debt is imaginary, but the production taken from us to pay it is real and enjoyed with relish by these government-sponsored banksters. By this method of profligate debt and usury, unborn generations of our children are already enslaved, literally, to be born into bonded servitude. And if being bound in that manner is not slavery, then is there not such a thing as slavery upon earth? The clearest of constitutional guarantees is ignored or perverted to meet a desired end. For example, we are told that the plain wording of the Second Amendment, and I quote, "the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed," end quote, has several interpretations, but it does not mean that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Figure that out, if you can. Meanwhile, the Bureau of Internal Revenue of Puerto Rico, hereafter known as the Internal Revenue Service, continues to collect taxes without any jurisdiction whatsoever to do so within the 50 states, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms of Puerto Rico prevents child abuse in Texas by gassing and burning to death the alleged victims of the alleged abuse. The military has assisted in these crimes in clear violation of our laws, and again, the persons who have committed these abuses are protected from criminal prosecution. Some have even been rewarded for a job well done. While playing out sham displays of the most solemn interest in the public good, holding contrasting positions with great reason and deliberation in the public eye, politicians of all parties, along with their media accomplices, enjoy common membership in private elitist organizations with well-defined political agendas. It's just a game, at your expense. They deftly create and then manipulate both sides in a grand Hegelian synthesis to meet their predetermined end, regardless of party affiliation. And deaf to promises spoken by their own lips, these men of so little honor all pursue the same object. There is not a nickel's difference between the Republican and Democrat Party. Over a period of many years, it has become apparent to even the most ardent believers in our institutions that through all attempts at restraint and redress, and through the repeated face-changing exercises of elections, there exists a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object, a design to reduce the American people under absolute despotism, in our case, a much-proclaimed New World Order. Many well-founded constitutional, jurisdictional, and strictly legal arguments have been made against these abuses, but by now, most thinking men realize the futility of arguing any point of law with the king who presumes to write the law. No matter how compelling the argument, and no matter what legal foundation among which it is constructed, it can be altered, abolished, or nullified by the next stroke of the pen if he finds it disagreeable. American government exhibits the character of such a king in this instance also. But far more important than the overt changing of laws, most realize by now that in making any legal defense or petition for redress, we are compelled to present it before people who have limited knowledge of the Constitution and law at best, or have utter disregard and contempt for it at worst. If this were not so, they would not now be enforcing such illegal and unconstitutional measures upon us. You see, cynicism, ladies and gentlemen, cynicism is no longer a requirement for one to grasp the futility of efforts to stop government abuses by reference to the Constitution or to the law. As Paine observed in his pamphlet, Common Sense, quote, "Government, even in its best state, is but a necessary evil, in its worst state, an intolerable one. For when we suffer or are exposed to the same miseries by a government which we might expect in a country without government, our calamity is heightened by reflecting that we furnish the means by which we suffer." End quote. And I tell you now, this state of affairs is no longer tolerable. We are at a decision point. But if we acknowledge the abuses of our own government against us as being intolerable, and we also admit the futility of relying upon constitutional or legal authority for its control, we find ourselves at this crucial decision point and decide we must. For if we no longer admit hope of prevailing under the law, yet we remain convinced that our cause is just and right, then we must either submit, abandoning that just and right cause, or, ladies and gentlemen, we must establish that just and right cause against the will and power of an abusive government, come what may. Recognize clearly now that this is the point of departure beyond which, if we proceed, we no longer seek to make government work. We, in fact, seek to cast it off and start anew. And in pondering these things, we must be mindful that the majority of our fellows either fail to recognize the ominous portent of our times, or when confronted with the knowledge, will find reason to support continuation of the current state of affairs, usually because of no other reason than abject cowardice. But most assuredly, as Paine observed, quote, "The period is now arrived in which either they or we must change our sentiments, or one or both must fall," end quote. Now, having then arrived at so important a juncture fraught with such grave implications and consequences, we must settle clearly in our hearts and minds the exact nature of our sentiments. It will not do to proceed on the basis of our feelings of patriotism or right. This theory of government or that, no matter how heartfelt, no matter how long or dearly held, we must be clear as to what that just and right cause is, and what course we must follow. As Paine wrote, quote, "He whose heart is firm and whose conscience approves his conduct will pursue his principles unto death." My own line of reasoning, as to myself, as straight and clear as a ray of light, end quote. Now, such firmness of heart and clearness of mind and purpose, ladies and gentlemen, are absolutely essential if we are to withstand the trials certain to lie along such a course. For our support, mountains of volumes of patriotism and right are available to us to guide, animate, and inspire us. And I certainly do not belittle their value. But when our world is shaken, it will be the single rock on which we place our feet that must support us. We must therefore choose our rock from the mountains of reasons and stand upon it. We must know and understand our reason, be willing and able to act upon it without hesitation or uncertainty, and be able to clearly communicate it to anyone at any time, and we must be ready and willing to die for it if that occasion arises. For Americans, uniquely, and for all men, there can be but one foundation principle upon which to stand in these matters. And I say for Americans uniquely because this principle was the single principle cited by the founders of this nation as being the basis for all legitimate government. No other principle can withstand its rightness or power. And this principle was most eloquently stated in the Declaration of Independence. And I quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government," end quote. This principle of creator-endowed, unalienable rights, thus stated, must be the rock upon which we stand, just as it is the foundation upon which this nation was built. These words will sound familiar to most of us, but few grasp the meaning and truth expressed by them. To many of us, this will sound like a lofty ideal with only vague meaning and little application to real life. Quite the contrary case is the reality. The meaning is very specific and crystal clear. It is, in fact, self-evident to any willing to consider it. Its application is broad, powerful, and fundamental to our lives. Consider these things carefully and understand them well. We hold these truths to be self-evident. That is, the things to follow need no legal interpretation or elaboration, being self-evident to all thinking men. That all men are created equal. Most modern attention has been paid to the equal status of men, and usually for political gain, but the actual emphasis, as used by the founders, was on the recognition of the created status of man, explicit recognition of a creator. That they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. This is recognition that the Creator grants rights to individual men. No other source of any right is acknowledged. Further, the rights so endowed are not alienable by other men acting individually or as any organized body without qualification. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Now note carefully, the sole legitimate function of governments is to secure the pre-existing rights of the individual, which were endowed by the Creator. No other function of government is mentioned, and no rights are granted by government. Deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Legitimate government, ladies and gentlemen, has no just authority other than that granted by the governed. Importantly, this consent cannot mean only the consent of the majority, as in a democracy, for then the unalienable rights of all others could be subjugated to the will of the majority and would thus not be unalienable. This was never a democracy. It is a constitutional republic. Consent must be as individual as the rights themselves, otherwise they are not rights. So long as any individual does not attempt to materially deny such rights to others, government to which he has not consented can have no just claim upon him. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it. Because all governmental authority originates in the people have the right to reclaim that authority if government causes or allows interference with those rights which it is founded to protect. Government never has the power to abolish rights, but when it tries to do so, men have the right to abolish government. Again, this right exists with each created individual, not in the will of the majority. And ladies and gentlemen, lest you think this comes from me, I did not make this up. Neither did the founders of this nation produce these principles from thin air. These are timeless principles and ideals, and they form the only foundation and authority of American government. And if you don't know and understand that, you had better get your nose in the books written of the history of this government, and in particular, the writings of those men who founded it. We had better learn that well, and we had better learn it quickly. The Constitution itself is subordinate to these principles set forth in the Declaration of Independence. And lest you have forgotten, the Declaration of Independence is the first document in law of the United States of America. It is the document that severed us from the tyranny of the king and established this country as an independent nation upon this earth. The Constitution only sets forth the proposed mechanism for meeting the stated goal of securing and preserving the pre-existing unalienable rights of the people. Learn that. Learn that clearly. All rights are granted by the Creator. There is no such thing as a constitutional right. Let me say that again, because I hear everybody talk about their constitutional rights all the time. There isn't any such thing. You do not have constitutional rights. You have creator-endowed rights protected by a contract known as the Constitution for the United States of America. There is no such thing as a constitutional right. There are only constitutionally protected rights endowed by the Creator and already belonging to the people. It is so clear. Consider the alternative. Consider the alternative. Either our rights are granted by our Creator and are unalienable by other men, or they are granted by men and are therefore subject to amendment and recall by men. There are no other alternatives. And if our rights are defined by men in any way, be it the decree of an absolute monarch, or by the referendum of a democracy, then there are no limitations on the power of one individual or group to enslave or oppress another. For then morals, ethics, and law becomes subjective. And whoever holds the reins of power can dictate what they will be. Under these conditions, the lynch mob, the highest expression of democracy, may form in the heat of passion and decide by right of numbers alone the definition of justice for that moment. The lynch mob of the tyrannical king, in fact, becomes the supreme standard of justice and right. And it can change from day to day, from hour to hour, from week to week, month to month, and from year to year. And no one will ever be safe. Many will say that they do not believe in a creator God. I beg them consider what dangerous ground that is to tread. As stated by radio commentator William Cooper, that's me, folks, and he quotes me verbatim, whether you believe in God or not, whether you believe in a creator or not, you had better start. Without a creator, without creator-endowed unalienable rights, you are nothing. Nothing. This nation is nothing. The Constitution is nothing. The Declaration of Independence is nothing. Our forefathers were wackos, and this great nation and the freedom and liberties and opportunities that come with it will crumble around your feet. Because without a creator and creator-endowed unalienable rights, you are no better than the cockroach who lives under your sink. Without God, you have no protection. Without a creator, man is on the same footing and the same basis as any other animal and insect and fish, any plant on this earth, and is subject to the laws of the jungle. And anyone who is strong enough or cunning enough to enslave man is entitled to do so under those circumstances, for it was the statement that there is a creator, and that creator has given man unalienable rights that set men free for the first time in the history of the world. for that is the cornerstone. That is the foundation upon which the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and this nation rests, and without it, it will all crumble to nothing. All of it will crumble into dust beneath your feet and will become as nothing. End quote. William Cooper from the Hour of the Time radio broadcast, author of the book Behold a Pale Horse. And he goes on. It is precisely the loss or abandonment of this valuable cornerstone which has caused the crumbling of our nation today. So we might now ask, if our nation was founded on so simple and good a foundation, how is it that we have strayed so far? And it is important not simply to answer that question, but to understand that there is an answer, that this has not simply happened, and that the cause is simple and knowable. But to understand that there is an answer, that this has not simply happened, and that the cause is simple and knowable. For if we understand that it has resulted from a design of men, perhaps our anger directed at those responsible will motivate us to reestablish our foundations where simple political motivations have failed. And believe me, they have failed. Consider for a moment that this American government, which came into existence only to preserve creator-endowed rights, should enforce so zealously the exclusion of teaching of creation from the educational system and the exclusion of any creator God from public life. I tell you, it cannot. At the instant that American government denied the creator, it ceased to have any authority to govern. Let me say that again so you understand it perfectly. At the instant that American government denied the Creator, it ceased to have any authority to govern. But if effect betrays intent, consider the likely intent of this subtle action. Generations of free men have now been made to forget their Creator, and as a direct result have given up voluntarily, if unknowingly, those important creator-endowed rights. In doing so, we have also given over the prosperity, power, and wealth which results from their exercise to these slave masters, which was their object. Without a strong knowledge of our created status, we have been utterly confused and defenseless against these usurpations of creator-endowed rights. Don't you all feel confused and helpless and defenseless? Like there's really nothing you can do, and everybody knows that there's something terribly wrong, and you're scared. I remember when I was a boy, when a policeman came down our block, all of us used to flock to go talk to the policeman because we loved him. No one was afraid of the police. And when they say that people didn't lock their doors, I'm here to tell you that that's true. People did not lock their doors. My parents did not lock the doors at night. We children played in the streets long after dark without fear of interference, molestation, or sexual perversion of any kind. I never knew a criminal. I never even knew a girl that got pregnant out of wedlock. Now, I'm not saying that these things did not occur somewhere, but they didn't occur where I lived. They did not occur in the unbelievable numbers that they occur today. In fact, the crime in this country was extremely low and confined mostly to the inter-big cities. Indeed, for most of us, the concept of creator-endowed unalienable rights is little more than high-sounding, hollow words. I know some of you are shaking your heads saying, oh, what is this, you know? But it's familiar to you. You've heard it somewhere. It's a familiar but vague and empty echo of something with long forgotten meaning, and you're really not sure what I'm talking about yet. But if you, as you listen, feel confusion or think this is an abstract or religious ideal, It is probably due more to the manipulations that you have been subjected to in your life than to your own thought or conclusions. Consider what you have lost, or rather what has been stolen from you by this simple omission from your education. This is, ladies and gentlemen, in fact, the reason for the effort over the years to remove prayer from school and the concept of a creator God from the King's educational system. It was this single concept which was the strength of our nation of free men, and if we were to be brought again into the bondage of arbitrary government, we had to be stripped of any meaningful concept of a creator God. Because without a creator God, there are no creator endowed rights. It's a simple principle. No creator, no creator endowed rights, and the only rights we would recognize would be those granted by men. Anything granted by men can be changed, taken away, or stomped into the dust at a moment's notice. Thus, these base, dishonorable men occupying the seat of government today as kings are again free to govern by their own means without this important restraint. And I tell you, they know full well the power of this principle and do not want you to know it, and it is one of the primary reasons that they are trying so hard to silence us, to murder us, or to imprison us. Before we are able to convey these principles and ideals to the general American public once again, and the people once again reach out to take back their power. At the same time, we have been taught by the same educational system that our form of government is a democracy, which is a lie. It is not. V.I. Lenin, the founder of the Soviet Union, said, quote, democracy is indispensable to socialism, end quote. Marx said, the father of socialism, Karl Marx, said, democracy is indispensable to socialism. We have been told over and over again. Your children are being told today in their schools that our form of government is a democracy. It is a lie. It is not. And toward this end, we are constantly reminded that our most valuable right and solemn obligation is to participate, to vote. And most of us now believe it. We have come to think that those who do not vote have no right to complain about governmental abuses. Stated another way, if government takes away your rights, it is because you did not participate enough. So candidate after candidate, issue after issue, we participate. We expend our energies, resources, and time like rats in a maze, hoping that the next turn of the voting lever will provide the way out to rest and security. But it always leads only to another and then another until we no longer care and simply move along with the most comfortable group of fellow rats. Rats, rats. We choose the lesser of two evils, forgetting that a deal with the devil is still a deal with the devil, whether it's the lesser of the greater of the two. The value of absolute unalienable rights quickly becomes apparent under these conditions, as does the difference between men and rats, and deals with the devil. Now, in reality, under the American Republic, founded upon creator endowed unalienable rights and strictly limited powers of government, the most solemn and significant right is the right of the people to not participate and yet to remain secure in their liberties and possessions, whether they participate or not. The most solemn and significant right is the right of the people to not participate and yet to remain secure in their liberties and possessions, whether they participate or not, in the proper, as founded, American Republic, resting upon the rock of creator-endowed unalienable rights and strictly limited powers of government. This is, in fact, the often mentioned and seldom understood difference between our republic and a democracy. Under our republic, the rights of the individual are secure and of primary importance, requiring no participation on the part of the individual. The power of government is strictly limited. Under a democracy, all things are subject to the will of voters and not necessarily the majority. There are no absolutes, and whoever can best work the crowd can most effectively govern. There is no right or wrong. Wrong becomes right, and right becomes wrong. And yes, yes, you better believe it has been by design, by degrees, and by consent that we have surrendered our rights. We have been seduced into ceasing from the exercise of those rights voluntarily. Thus, our consent was obtained fraudulently by the calculated concealment of knowledge of those rights and of their source and value and of all terms of the contract into which we entered to voluntarily give up our rights. A right that is not exercised and thus has no effect is as if it did not ever exist. Don't you understand that? And further, by the delusion of democracy, we have confirmed our consent each time we voted and have become conditioned to accept government's authority to commit the abuses and excesses we witness. And we submit to every measure and restrain ourselves from meaningful opposition, being ever hopeful that we can effect change by our next vote in the next election. And by these means, the king has reclaimed his throne and you have been re-enslaved. Ladies and gentlemen, we must understand these things and convince ourselves again of the rightness and power of this principle of creator-endowed unalienable rights. How then do we dethrone these would-be kings and reclaim our rights and nation? First, because the only just power that government wields is derived from the consent of the governed, and because the loss of right and all attendant abuses have been done by the authority of our consent, we must rescind our consent to be so governed. Next, the rights previously surrendered by consent must be reclaimed. Rights thus reclaimed to have effect must be exercised. These require action and risk on the part of the individual, but there is no more effective strategy. There is no better. If it is dearness only that gives everything its value, then we must decide what cost would be too dear to free ourselves and generations yet unborn from certain and absolute slavery. And I tell you, there is no cost too dear. I am prepared to die for it. For my children's future, for your children's future, for you, for all the generations of unborn, for my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren whom I do not even know and who do not even exist upon this earth as yet. That is what our founding fathers did for us whom they called their posterity. Consent may and must be withdrawn on the basis that consent granted without full knowledge of the consequences, or worse yet, consent obtained by deception, is not consent at all. It is fraud. In the main, this requires no immediate overt action on the part of the individual, but rather is the settling within one's own mind of his relationship to his Creator, his fellow men, and to their government. It is, in fact, to exercise the most basic of rights, the right to not participate and not to be bound by the actions of those who do. So realize clearly that the most important act of withdrawing one's consent to be so governed is to consciously set one's mind to do so. Many overt acts, such as filings of legal documents, claims of jurisdictions and citizenship, etc., can be performed, having as their stated purpose the reclaiming of those rights and sovereignty. But at the root, most of these are actually designed to give the individual some perceived security under the law. That is, they are designed to obtain the king's permission to be sovereign. And if you have to have the king's permission, you cannot, will not, ever be sovereign. It's a joke. You see, this must not become a legal wrangling over which government agency or law has or does not have jurisdiction over us. Rather, it must be the unqualified assertion that none have jurisdiction unless we grant it, and we do not grant it. All strictly legal arguments are moot and are to be avoided. For if we look again to the law for justification, we are not seeking our right, we are seeking permission again from the king. No. The most effective strategy by far is to settle matters within one's own mind and then to conduct oneself accordingly. Accustom yourself to thinking and acting on this basis. If the king objects, let him come to you and be prepared to withstand him for your part. Defend yourself. Withdrawal of consent is to largely ignore popular political debate as of no consequence, and certainly not to participate in it, never to vote, and not to be bound in any way by the outcome of any election. As such, this is a rethinking and repudiation of democracy and will likely be very difficult for some who have erroneously thought democracy to be the foundation of our liberties. But consider, ladies and gentlemen, that in some of the most oppressive nations on this earth, voting is mandatory. If it were not, no legal authority could be claimed by those governments, and without the hope, even if false hope, provided by their vote, the people might rebel. Why do you think the Soviet Union required all of their citizens to vote in every election, even though there was only one party and one person running for each office? It was so they could say they had the consent of the people to govern those people in any way they wished. That's what democracy brings you. How often have you felt that you had no real choice in an election and decided to vote for the lesser of the evils? Consider that in doing this, you have consented to be governed by an acknowledged evil. If you were playing a card game and discovered it to be rigged against you, it would not be sufficient to complain and continue to play, nevertheless, the game. You must leave the table. You must leave the table. Choosing the lesser of two evils is a deal with the devil. Do you understand that? You see, we have been taught that majority rule is an American tradition, another lie, and that our electoral process constitute majority rule. But in most elections, the actual majority of the people never vote. But instead of counting this as a rejection of all the ballot choices, we are told that it is voter apathy. But picture another American icon. The good sheriff. The good sheriff who faces down the lynch mob bent on violence. The object lesson here is that the principle of right, and even a single man who recognizes it, must prevail against the will of the majority. This is our true heritage. It is the stand that I take, and I will die in those footprints. Neither is withdrawal in this matter lawlessness, as many will claim. When one claims his creator-endowed rights, he also submits to his creator's law for all men. What the founders called natural law. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, etc. They that do these things harm no one. As stated by James Madison in 1788, quote, "We have staked the future upon the capacity of each and all of us to govern ourselves, to sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God," end quote. In claiming the rights endowed by the Creator, we also assume the responsibility of conducting ourselves according to His laws, including that of sustaining ourselves materially according to His laws. These are not matters to be trifled with as any. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, as any who try will soon learn. You see, reclaiming those lost rights requires more overt action on the part of the individual. As I mentioned previously, these rights were surrendered when we voluntarily ceased to exercise them. For example, our right to be free from taxation to which we have not consented is surrendered at the time we pay the tax. That's why when I petitioned the Internal Revenue Service through the Freedom of Information Act to produce the documents which required me to file and pay the income tax, they sent me an old copy of a 1040 that I had signed and sent in as a return. That was their documentation. And we can protest all we want. But if we pay it, we have consented to it and surrendered that right. Later, ladies and gentlemen, I rescinded that consent in all contracts. In order for a right to be reclaimed, it must be exercised, which means you must refuse to pay, as I have done. Also, as mentioned earlier, there is power and prosperity associated with these rights. The benefit is ours when we exercise them. It is our oppressors when we do not. Now, how many of you will murmur about how this sounds good and is very idealistic and all that, but that I should just try making that argument in front of a judge? But that is exactly the point. Exercise of a creator-endowed unalienable right requires no prior permission from any officer of any man's government, and no judge has authority over God. When we exercise that which is clearly granted by our Creator and protected by our Constitution, we are only within our right and cannot cause harm to any of our fellows whatsoever. Now, if they and their agents in government leave us unmolested in these things, which is our desire, then by our actions we establish again that right for ourselves and become the medium through which is transmitted to our children and all others who will receive it. That is why they will not ignore it. That is why they must and will ultimately murder us, for we will not submit to their arrest. If, however, they seek to deprive us of that right and bind us to their will, it is they who act presumptuously and outside of law. They are outlaws, both man's and God's law. They are outlaws. You see, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Anything that is repugnant to it or exceeds its restrictions or granted powers is null and is canceled upon its inception. If it is not, then the Constitution is not the supreme law of the land. It's already been thrown in the trash can, and we are all fooling ourselves. It's a great big joke, and we are the butt of the joke. And we are already enslaved. We just have not been told yet. Either this is a nation under law, with the Constitution as the supreme law, or this is a despotic, tyrannical king who has come back to reclaim his serfs, his slaves, and his kitchen maids. Which are you? Do I then expect that those who follow this course will remain unmolested in free exercise of these rights? Unfortunately not. I'm a realist. I understand what's going on in this world, and I understand full well the nature of despotism, for I have seen it firsthand all over the world. I fully expect that the modern tyranny which has so craftily enslaved our nation will no more easily release us than the Egyptian Pharaoh was willing to release the enslaved Israelites, or the King of England was willing to release the American colonists, and for the same reasons. You see, we are their wealth, we are their merchandise, and we are their power. Without us as willing slaves and possessions, they are nothing. No, they may tolerate many things and even make certain concessions when necessary to placate those who would oppose them, but they will not, cannot allow any to survive outside their grasp. And ladies and gentlemen, that does it for today. We will continue with this same broadcast on tomorrow's episode of the Hour of the Time. Make sure you understand it, and if you don't, you can order the tapes, and we may tell you how to do that tomorrow. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you. If tomorrow all the
and I had to start again. It's just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, but the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, wearing the sign of my free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you, and it can't hurt till today. But there ain't no doubt I love this. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston, and New York to LA, where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say.
You're listening to 101.1 FM Eager, classic radio like you always wished it could be, and the last voice of freedom in America. We now return you to all oldies most of the time.
Yeah.